What's really exciting is that while we sometimes think about how faithful we are, He's always faithful. Sometimes we slip up, mess up, things come up, but He is always faithful. All right, we're in Samuel. 1 Samuel, chapter 17, if I'm not mistaken. And them old Philistines is wanting to get ugly again. Imagine that. It says, now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together in Succoth, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Succoth and Azekah in Ephesadamian. And if y'all can say that better, go for it. And Saul and his men of Israel were gathered together and pitched in the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. So Saul heard they were coming. They'd already come in, done some business. And so they're sitting there, and they're on their side of the mountain and with a big valley there, and Saul's on his side of the mountain in a big valley there. And they're already skirmishing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But undoubtedly, Saul, just by himself and his army, couldn't get rid of these Philistines. He couldn't scare them off. They just kept staying there. And it says, and the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. So it looks like that they would go down in this valley to do their fighting, and this army's up here on this hill, kind of out of protected, and this one's up on this hill, kind of protected. They can watch each other. And it says, and there's a big valley there between them. And it says, and there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, a cubit being somewhere between 18 and 20 inches, that made him to be, and a span being half of a cubit, made him around 11 foot 6 tall or thereabouts. Some people have him at 9 foot if it's 18. Some people have him a little taller. But 11 foot 6 is still a pretty good sized giant. Considering I'm only 5 something, that makes him twice my height. About 11, he'd be bumping his head on the roof, yeah. That's right. He'd have to squat over to come, and he'd have to bend over to come through the door. Yes, sir. That's a big guy. So it says here, he was a champion, and he came out to tempt and to taunt and to aggravate the Israelites. It says, and he was a big feller. It says he was about 11 foot 6, thereabouts. He was about a cubit, and he was of the giant of Gath giants, and so there was more of those family members back there. And when we read about in the Kings about David's mighty men, we'll find out that there were some lion-like guys, and there were some guys who were big, and all kind of fellas like that. So this ain't the only giant. This guy had 4 brothers. So there's at least 5 giants still alive right here at this time, because he's got 4 brothers. And he'd been a champion or a fighter from his very youth. We're going to find that out later. But it says, and he had a helmet of brass upon his head and was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was about 5,000 shekels of brass. And the measurement that I got from about 5,000 shekels of brass is that coat weighed about 156 pounds, give or take. That's a little bit less than what I weigh. Just a little bit. So he's wearing a coat that weighs 156 pounds. Now you got to figure he's all decked out, and he's used to carrying that kind of weight, and he's been fighting with that kind of weight on. So as he rapes that on, he doesn't realize he's not like pumping iron for 156 pounds. He's just carrying it with his legs and his body. So he's a pretty strong feller. And then it says that he had a coat that weighed nearly 100, and then he had a helmet that goes on his head, and we don't know how. It didn't say, I couldn't find the measurement on the helmet, but he's got a helmet of brass on his head. Now, they've got several different kinds of helmets back in those days. They had them with the flip-up shields, like the knights used to use. And then they had the ones with the little nose piece went down in the middle. And then they had the one where you just have eyesight. Then they had a helmet that just went right like this around and sort of capped the top of your head, depending on what type of helmet you used. And the reason I'm saying this is because when David throws his rock, he hits him between the eyes. Now, brass is pretty light metal. So a good rock chunker, even if he did have his visor on or his eye holes, he could chunk a rock that could possibly penetrate the brass or possibly go right between the eye sockets and hit him right between the forehead. I mean, forehead. I mean, come on, an inch or so. Forehead. So when people say, there's no way that he could have thrown this and went and damaged the helmet, there's some of those guys that could throw rocks. Purtis, they would damage shields and everything. These guys could chunk her. You get a rock getting around a certain centrifugal force to let her go, that's like shooting a gun at somebody. And the brass and all was a finer, smaller metal. It wasn't like iron or something like that, so it could be penetrated. So it says here, and I only bring that up because of the rock throwing later on, but it says he had a helmet of brass upon his head and his arm, and he had a coat of mail that weighed about 156 pounds, about 5,000 shekels of brass. And of course, that means the coat of mail was made out of brass. And if you've ever seen the old knight's coat, it was wires that were intertwined together that they would wear, and that way they would keep swords and knives from being able to cut you. You'd have to have a good under the arm shot or something like that, or in the throat shot, because these things were designed to help stop arrows and things like that. They weren't perfect, but they sure did a good job of keeping those guys alive back then. So he had that coat of mail on. And he says he had greaves of brass upon his legs and target about his shoulders. So we see these greaves of brass, and we're going to get to the weight of them in just a minute. But greaves of brass go from his thighs all the way down to the tops of his feet. So these greaves of brass, each one on each leg, weighing about 15 pounds apiece. So he's carrying 30 pounds of leg iron just to keep somebody from slicing his leg when he goes by. He says here in legs and brass, a target of brass around his neck. So between his coat of mail and his helmet, there was another piece that goes around that he could, so he could move his head up and down. And that piece, his target, weighed about another 30 pounds. So by the time we get through this suit weighs right at 272 pounds that he's packing. Now, for me, that would be all I could stand for about three steps. But this guy is so big and so massive, he could walk around with nearly 300 pounds of armor on, and it doesn't even bother him. He's used to it. It says, and he has a spear, and he has the staff of his spear was of a weaver's beam, and they say that this spear was maybe possibly 20 to 26 foot long, which is a seriously long spear. And he says, and it had a head of iron that weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one to bear his shield, and 600 shekels of iron was 20 pounds of head. So you got a 20 foot long stick with a 20 pound weight sticking off of the end. That's pretty serious to pick up and down. And that was his spear that he chunked or gouged at people with whenever he would fight with them. So we've got him wearing all of that. And it says, and he had one guy to carry a shield. Of course, we know that there's a shield bearer, an armor bearer, and stuff like that. So he had a guy to carry a shield out in front of him before he would go into battle, I guess, if they were shooting arrows or whatever, until he got close enough to do what he was going to do, and then the shield guy would get to the side and he could do his damage. But it says here, and he stood, and he cried unto the armies of Israel, and said to them, why are you come out and set your battle in array? Am I not a Philistine, and ye servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come out down to me. If he be able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then ye shall be our servants and serve us. Now this is a regular soldier out of the army. He didn't have the authority, so to say, as to give up his whole country just to lose a battle. So he's just coming out there to taunt them. And you don't see that the Israelites saying, yeah, all right, we'll come out there and whip you, and if we whoop you, it's all over with. They ain't doing that either. But you would say he's coming out every day. And this, we're going to get to it. He comes out every day for 40 days, twice a day. And he taunts them and picks on them and hollers at them and cusses their God and fusses at their God and says how weak they are. And he say, choose you out a man. Now think about it. Saul should have been the man just walked out there and said, look, big boy, fix put you in your place in the name of God. But you remember last chapter, Saul got the Spirit of God taken away from him. Saul got this spirit of fear and anguish put onto him. Saul is not ready to fight like he used to be. Somewhere along the line, that heart of fighting and that heart of winning disappeared. Just a few chapters before, we have his son. And his son went out there with him and one man, and they whooped the whole garrison right there in one spot. You'd say, now you would figure the son would go out there and say, we're going to shut this old boy up right now. But for some reason, God had withdrawn the brave spirit. You say, I don't see that in there. You don't see none of Israel walking out there to get onto this guy. Nobody's getting out of their place. Nobody's, I'm going to shut that old boy up. I'm tired of hearing him talk. 40 days he's been coming. 40 days he's been cussing at us and fussing at us and raising Cain with us. I'm going to shut that boy up today. They may have been brave. They may have been willing to go out there and skirmish, but they weren't brave enough one-on-one to go do it. They just wouldn't step out there. You see here it says, choose you one. And if I win, y'all serve me. And if you win, we'll serve you. And then he says, and the Philistine says, and I defy, right here he says, and I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. In other words, y'all are a bunch of cowards. And then he was making fun of their God and saying, I'm defying you, God. I'm defying your army. I'm defying all about you. I'm sitting there shaking my sword at you and saying, look at y'all. Come on out to me. Come on, fight with me. Y'all are a bunch of sissies. I'm sure he said that. And probably some other things, and I can't say that in church. So it says he got on to them and made fun of them. Then Saul and all his army heard those words of the Philistine and were dismayed and greatly afraid. Here's Jonathan, a brave man. His brothers, brave fighting men. Saul, a brave man, supposedly up until this time, willing to jump up and go fight. But one-on-one, looking at the giant and looking at little old me, I'm not going out there with that guy. He can just knock me over with a spear and run over me. He ain't even got to fight with me. He just gets run over you. He says, and they were greatly afraid. And I'm going to say they were greatly afraid because God withdrew the fight out of them. God can do that. God, people don't think that, but God can take and change a man's heart. Can change the way he feels about something. What would scare me one day, the next day may not, and what may not scare me today may scare me tomorrow. It says, now David, here we go. Have we seen David yet? Very little, right? We fixed to see a lot more of David. It says, now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he was the eighth son, and his the name went among men for of old, as in the day. And let me read that over. And he's had eight sons, and a man went among men of old in the days of Saul. In other words, Jesse was an older guy. Now Jesse, if he'd have been a younger guy, he was renowned for being a fighter, a tough guy, a man's man. He would have went to the battle. But because he's of age and stuff like that, instead of Jesse going to the battle, he's going to send three of his sons to this battle. He's going to send three of his sons to go join the army, or at least three of his sons decided to go, and he was in compliance with it. He said, go ahead, sons. He says, and the three eldest sons of Jesse went and followed after Saul to the battle. And the name of his three sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and the next was him, Abinadab, and the third Shammah. Now for some reason he don't never name all the sons, but these three they named, and these three were the older ones, and these three were the ones that Samuel says, man, surely this is the one that's going to be king. Surely that man, that's a fine looking guy. But all these three went and followed after Saul into the war, into the battle, into the army. And David was the younger of the three eldest sons and that followed Saul. But David went and returned from Samuel, or from Saul, to feed his father's sheep in Bethlehem. Now, if you remember the last time we saw David, he's playing his guitar, playing music for Saul in his courts, helping him feel better. Well, undoubtedly, he got to feeling better. So after he got to feeling better, David goes back, take care of sheep, take care of his daddy, take care of the stuff back at the house. He says, and David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So David was always about doing business, taking care of home life, taking care of the family, taking care of the stuff that needs to be taken care of, because only time that he needed to go play his guitar would be whenever that evil spirit would come over Saul and mess him up. So right now, undoubtedly, he's in a pretty good mood, or he's doing all right, because David's back at the house taking care of the sheep. And then it says, and the Philistines drew near, the Philistine, not Steens, this particular Philistine, the Goliath, drew near morning and evening and presented himself for 40 days. You could get agitated after 40 days of seeing somebody come and taunt you and pick on you and mess with you. You would think he could have stirred up somebody to make them mad enough to go out and fight after 40 days. So after 40 days he was doing this, and then Jesse said unto David, now Jesse doesn't know what's happening at the war, he wants to find out. Jesse said, you need to go find out what's going on with your brothers. You need to go see what's happening with the battle. You need to go see what's happening with Saul. You need to go see what's going on. So he says to Jesse, he says to his son, he says, take now for thy brothers an ephah of his parched corn and these 10 loaves. And return to the camp to thy brethren. In other words, before you go, make sure you bring a present. Make sure you bring something to feed them with. Now, there's enough food in the ephah to feed 10 men one day. So there's enough food there to last them, at least if there's 3 brothers, that'd be a couple, 3 meals for 2 or 3 days. Or if he gives the cheeses and stuff to the captain, so the captain might show a little favoritism to the sons, we don't know. But anyways, there's enough food there to last for a few days. And he says, carry these loaves into the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses. Now, I don't know how big the cheeses was. Now, I've seen some in the meat market that are about this big around. They get to be some pretty good-sized cheeses. He said, carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain, and their thousands, and look now, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. In other words, see how they're doing. Now, when it says, see how they fare and take their pledge, it's a good possibility when they were between meals or between paychecks, that they might have said, look, keep my coat or something like that and so I can get some groceries. So he says, now when you go, not only do you bring them this food, not only do you take care of their stuff, but if they've made any pledges where they've pawned off their stuff so that they need to get it back later, you find out who they pawned it to, you go and pay off that debt, get them back their coats and get them back their clothes, because the army right then was not normally done by the government. Those guys, unless their families come and fed them, took care of them or whatever, that's the only support they had. So he said, if they've got any pledges where they've loaned out their garments or whatever, you make sure you catch them up and get them paid up and get the clothes back to them, get their stuff back to them, so they'll be without need. And he says, take care of their pledges. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning, and he left the sheep with a keeper. Ain't that something? He's got been given a mission. Go, my son. Take you a donkey. Load it up. Take you a couple of servants. Go see what's happening. You said, man, I'm going to get to see the fight. But before he goes to see the fight, before he goes to see how his brothers are doing, he makes sure somebody's taking care of the sheep. He made sure that they wasn't left alone to get strayed out, run off, chased around by some bear or some lion later on. He says, before I go, even though my dad gave me direct orders what to do, I want to make sure that my job is covered. David was the kind of guy that if he was going to be out of work for a day or two, he made sure somebody was there taking care of it. He says, he rose up early in the morning, and he left the sheep with a keeper, and he took and went as Jesse had commanded him, and he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. Now, you can bet them guys did some hollering. Different army. If you ever watched any of these war movies, some people give blood-curdling screams and some people growl like lions. And it's just a thing that men do to try to scare the other guy. Does it help? I don't know. But it sure makes you feel better when you're running for your life to scream like bloody murder. Just scream. And go check them. If you ever watch any of them cowboy Indian shows, what were the Indians doing when they were coming? They were screaming. They sounded wild and wicked and scary. That's what it does. It makes your mind think you're something you're not. It makes your mind scared. So it says here, these men were shouting. And it says, and they were in the fight of the battle, and they were shouting for the battle. And Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, the army against army. So they're already at it. You can hear the shields are hitting, and the swords are hitting, and the arrows are flying. So the battle's already in array. And David, wanting to find out about his brothers, instead of sitting there and watching, he says, and he leaves the carriage. He says, and David left the carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brother. So from up on the hill, wherever he was at, he could see, there's my brother there and there's my brother there. Okay. They're down there in the middle of this thing. Now, I'm going to go down there in the middle of all these swords are clanging and people stabbing each other and everything else. I'm going to say, hey, brother, how you doing? You feeling okay? Everything's good with you? You sit there and say, wow, why wouldn't he wait up on the hill till it's over and see what's happening? But David was so excited about doing what he was told to do, finding out the benefit of his brothers, finding out the care of his brothers, he charged right into the middle of the battle. He was a go-getter kind of guy. Charged right up in amongst them. And he saluted his brother. Now, I'm sitting there and said, hold up, David, I've got this going on here now. Hang on. Yeah, I'm doing okay. And that's how it was till the battle was over. But David did exactly what his daddy told him to do. You go find out how they're doing. You go check on their welfare. He didn't say, well, I'll wait till the fight's over, and if they're walking out, I'll say, yep, Dad, they're still here. Nope. I'm going to go right in there where they're at and check on them. He says, David left the carriage. He left the bread. He left the food. He left the cheeses. And he ran straight down into the battle. But he didn't leave it unattended. He left it with a keeper again. So even when David's so excited about getting down there, he still says, this stuff's got to get taken care of also. He was a guy that took care of details. And he saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the army of the Philistines. And he spake in court of the same words as David, and David heard them. This is David's first time to get to hear old Goliath talk. This is David's first time to hear what's going on. See, David don't have to hear it but once. The rest of them been hearing it for 40 days, twice a day. David gets to hear it one time. He says, and Goliath, and by the name came up, and the Philistines, and according as he had been doing this, the same. And David heard them, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. So as he's walking up, he's almost walking right into the camp. I mean, he's close enough that he could nearby probably throw his spear and get one if he wanted to. And he's going right up to them, taunting them, talking about their God, talking about their being cowards, talking about everything in the world about them. And he walks right up on them twice a day for 40 days. And now here David is. He just drove up. And this giant walks up there. And this giant's belittling his God. This giant's belittling his king. This giant's belittling his people. This giant is saying all kind of bad things about the people that David loves. And all the men of Israel, when they saw him, they fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? In other words, have you seen this guy, David? Look at him that has come up. Surely to defy Israel is he come up, and it shall be that the man that killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. In other words, the man who could take this big boy out. First of all, he's going to get a new wife, the king's daughter, which puts you in nobility right off the bat. Then he's going to enrich you with money and gold, whatever. And then he's going to make your family free, either make you a nobleman or free from taxation and everything else that goes on during the thing. So he's going to make you rich. If you're the guy who goes and kills this giant, he's going to give you a new wife. If you're the guy who goes and kills this giant, and he's going to make your whole family free from taxation and make you a wealthy person in town. Man, that sounds pretty good. Johnny did yet, though. Sounding good and getting the giant dead is two different things. Why didn't all any of these other guys, they said, here's what the king's going to do. Did you see any of them jumping up saying, it's my turn, I'm going to run out there and whoop this giant? Nope. Getting rich wasn't enough. Getting a wife wasn't enough. Getting free family wasn't enough, because all the rest of them that were there were scaredy cats. They were afraid to go out against this giant. It says, and David spake to the men and stood by, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach of Israel? He's thinking more about Israel's being reproached and talked bad about. He's not so much worried about being rich. He's not so much worried about getting a wife. He's not so much worried about being a free nobleman. He's sitting here saying, my country's getting reproached. My people are being talked bad about. Man, does he not understand that we belong to the living God? The one who made everything? We're his chosen out people, and this guy's going to come up here, I don't care how big he is, and he's going to make fun of us? You guys ain't mad? Y'all don't see something wrong with this picture? And David says, what shall happen to the man that does all this? To the man who's reproaches, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should divide the armies of the living God? Who does he think he is? Wow. None of y'all got mad yet? All of y'all going to just keep here shaking in your boots? Didn't none of y'all hear what he said? I heard what he said. He's making fun of our God. He's making fun of our people. He's calling us all kind of names. Ain't y'all got mad yet? You're going to keep letting him do this? I mean, 10 or 12 of y'all could just run out there and take him, maybe. Maybe not one-on-one, but he's close enough that we could run him down before he gets across the field again. And we're shaking in our boots, worried about him. Then it says, as the people answered him after the manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, the eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David and said, why camest thou hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and thy haughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. In other words, you just had to sneak off, didn't you? You just had to come down here. You had to come up here and stir things up. Who in the world do you think you are, David? Who told you to come up here, David? Well, he was obeying his father's orders. He says, and now he could have been saying, David, don't get too excited, boy. That's a big old guy out there. You are my littlest brother now. Don't go do something doofy. Don't go mess up, David. I know how your heart is. I know how you get all wound up about things. He says, I know thy pride and thy naughtiness of thine heart. Now we already know that Eliab's heart was not right with God already. But he's sitting there looking at David saying, boy, shut up. Don't get us in trouble with this big old guy out here. And he says, that thou camest to see the battle. And David says, what have I now done? Wait a minute, Eliab. Dad sent me up here. He told me to bring some food up here for you. He told me to come take care of your pledges. He told me to bring some cheese. I've done everything I was commanded to do, and now I hear this uncircumcised Philistine talking bad about us, and all I'm asking is, why are we letting it go on? Why hadn't somebody done something? Why hadn't somebody shut him up? What have I done? Is there not a cause? Is there not a reason for us to get excited about taking this guy out? He's talking about our God. He's talking about our people. He's bringing us down. And he turned from Eliab toward another, and he spake the same after the same manner, and the people answered again after the former manner. and says, look, the guy that whips that old boy is going to get rich, going to get a new wife, and he's going to get to be free in the world. So he turns around to somebody else, trying to stir them up, trying to get them excited. He says, is there not a cause? What could be done for this thing? And then he says, and when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. So while he's doing all this, talking about what's going on, Saul hears about him doing it. And Saul says, you go down there and get that boy, bring him up here. I want to see him. I want to talk to him. I want to find out who in the world it is, what's he got going on. And he's probably saying, if that boy wants to go out there, if he wants to go get killed, I'm going to just sit back and we'll let it happen, because, I mean, I'm not going to stop him. He says, and he sent for him, which has heard him speaking, and rehearsed these things before Saul, and Saul sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. In other words, why are we worried about him? Don't you remember who fights our battles? Don't you remember who we belong to? Don't you remember when you went out and fought the first time that God went ahead of you and whipped all those people and they lay dead and fighting each other out there in the middle of the field and you sat back and watched it? And now you're sitting here scared to death? Don't let your heart fear for this. He says, don't be afraid because of him. Thy servant, talk about David, will go and fight with this Philistine. Look, Saul, it's okay, bud. You just stay up here, do your king stuff. I'll go out there and I'll whip this Philistine. I know there's a cause. I know there's a reason to go do it. I know that God is for us. He says, Saul, you just stay here. Don't be afraid. Don't worry about it. You ain't even got to keep the word. If he kills me, y'all still ain't got to be his servant. Y'all keep fighting this old war if you want to. But he says, and Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. In other words, he's been fighting longer than you've been alive. He's been carrying a sword or a spear and wrestling and training from his very upbringing. And you have never even been tested in battle. You have never fought a fight in your life. You have never fought an army. You've never carried a sword. You never had to attack anybody. He says, you're just a youth. And some people think he was 16, 17 years old. More likely he was around 20 maybe. But it's still pretty young. At 20, you ain't the man you're going to be. You're growing. You're strong. You got some muscles. But you still got a lot to learn. It says here, this man's been fighting all of his life. This man done learned tricks of battle you ain't never seen. This man knows how to do holds and flips and things like that that you've never seen talked about. He knows how to do sword things that you've never seen with. He knows how to do blocks and stuff you've never had to deal with. Saul saying, David, you're but a youth. You ain't even been to boot camp yet. This guy's already been fighting wars over and over and over, or at least he says he has anyways. And he says, you're but a youth, and this man a man of war from his youth. And David said to Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion, and on another day possibly, and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And he's sitting there. Now look, this ain't the first time I've had to deal with some big bad stuff. I'm a shepherd boy, you're right. But there was a day that there was a lion come into the middle of them sheep and took one. There was a day when a bear come in the middle of them sheep and took one. There was a day when this little old shepherd boy had to be a man. He says, and I went out after him, and I smote him, and I delivered him out of the mouth. In other words, I hit him with my stick and he dropped the animal. And when he arose against me, I caught him by the beard and I smote him and I slew him. In other words, I went out there with my staff and I hit him all over the place till he dropped that sheep. And then when he realized he dropped his sheep and lost his prey, he looked at me and said, well, I'll eat you just as much as I eat him. And he turned on David, and David said, and then I slew him. I grabbed him. So to grab him by the beard, that means that lion or that bear had already got all over David. I mean, most bears, when they stand up, are about 12, 14 foot tall. A good lion is probably about 10 or 12 foot long, easy. And David has grabbed this thing by the beard. Well, if he's grabbed him by the beard, that means that lion is all over him. That lion has got him. It's amazing how the lion had him, and yet he smote the lion. The bear had him, and he smote the bear. He says, the servant slew both the lion and the bear. And then he compares them to this uncircumcised Philistine. Shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defiled the armies of the living God. Not because he made me mad, but because he's been saying bad things about my God. He's been saying bad things about my people. He's been saying bad things to stir things up. He says, I smoked that lion. That lion just was hungry. I smoked that bear. That bear was just hungry. And God had delivered me out of the hand of the lion, and he's delivered me out of the hand of the bear, and he will deliver me out of the hand of this uncircumcised Philistine. That's faith in God right there. He says, I'm not taking credit for being the one that whooped them, but God delivered me out of them. God brought me through it. He says, David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistines. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. He says, well, go, and I'll follow you. I'm right there beside you, David. I'm with you. No, he said, go, and the Lord be with you. I'm going to stay up here at the tent. I'm going to watch this from afar off. Kind of like Peter. I'm going to be afar off when y'all start doing all this stuff. He says, and David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor. Now, every time I ever read that before this week, I had in my mind, Saul took his armor off and put it on David. It sounds like it's what he said there. Saul gave David his armor. But technically what it means is Saul gave David his armor. In other words, there was some armor there available, maybe in David's size or pretty close. Because Saul, we might remember, Saul's what, 9 foot almost, 10 foot tall almost? David is 5-6 foot tall, 7 foot tall. So definitely the armor that Saul wore would not have fit. So when it says, and Saul gave David his armor, it means that Saul went to the armor store, picked out the armor for David, and he says, here's you some armor. Here's you some stuff to put on. Because there's no way, even that he could put on Saul's armor, and there's no way he would have tried to fight in armor where the arms would be too long or the legs would be too long. It would be total ridiculous for him to stumble out there and say, all right, John, here I am. It says, and Saul gave David his armor, and he put it on a helmet of brass upon his head. Now, this boy's been probably wearing a little piece of rope or a bandana or whatever all of his life, and now he gets a helmet of brass put on his head. That's already weighing him down. Also armed him with a coat of mail. Now, it's probably not as big a coat of mail as Goliath's got on, but if Goliath weighed 156 pounds, now he's putting on a coat of mail on David, probably weighs 75 to 80 pounds, depending on his stature, his size. So now David's got this brass hat on and 70, 80 pounds of mail on. He's never wore any of that before. He's sitting here sinking down in his tracks. It's so heavy on him because David's been used to being light of foot. Able to move, able to sprint, able to do. He didn't whoop that thing because he just stood still. He whooped that thing because he could move. It says David had on a coat, gave him a coat of mail, and he says, and David girded on his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go out. He says, let me think about this. I'm ready to go out there. I got this helmet on, boy. I'm looking good. I got this mail on. I'm looking good, and he got this big old sword on. And he's getting ready to go out, and he says, whoa, wait a minute. This just doesn't work for me. I haven't had time to practice with it. I haven't had time to run with it. I haven't had time to do any flips or roll over with it. It would be crazy for me to go out there in something untested, unproven, and stand up before this. You just told me this John been fighting all of his life. He knows how to do all this stuff. I may need to get back to the basics. I need to get back to what I know. I need to get back to my trust in God. Not trusting in this armor, not trusting in this sword, not trusting in this helmet, but let me get back to where I'm trusting in God for the battle. Let me get right back down to where it's supposed to be at. God wins the fight. God gets the glory. God takes care of His business. Because if I put on all this sword and stuff, if by chance I win, then I'm going to say, all of Saul's armor and stuff made me able instead of God. He says, he essayed to go out, for he had not proven it. And David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proven them. And David put them off of him. In other words, David says, whoa, whoa, whoa. I appreciate the armor. I really do. It's a nice gesture. I could use it maybe another time. And I'm sure that later on he used armor. But at this time, he wasn't ready for armor. At this time, God was doing something in David, trying to make David into something that David didn't know yet. God's going to make David the victor. Not because of David, but because of God. He says, I have not proved it. And he put them off, and he took his staff in his hand. Now, that's something he probably had. That staff was wore down from him grabbing it and touching it. He knew every inch of that staff, where to grab it, how to do it, just to do anything he wanted to do. He said he took his staff in his hand and he chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in his shepherd bag, which he had even in the script. And his sling was in his hand and he drew near the Philistines. He says he goes down to the stone. And I've heard preachers say, well, he got 5 stones because Goliath had 4 more brothers. That's a possibility. Or it's never a bad idea to have more than one bullet in your gun. Now, there's always the possibility you might sling that first stone and it miss. Of course, God had other plans for that first stone. But the thing is, you don't just bring one bullet. So he picked him out 5 smooth stones. Because nowhere in the story does it talk about his brothers being up, Goliath's brothers being up on the hill waiting or anything else. But David would take care of them later. But it says here, he's had him out 5 smooth stones. Now, smooth stone is a lot easier in your sling, because you wrap that little leather thing around a smooth round rock, and when you get ready to throw it, there's no sharp edges or anything to grab on the leather to cause it to spin out of control or to catch up and make it go wild. A smooth stone comes out of that sling. If you're a proficient slinger, then you could probably hit that doorknob back there every time. And we know that the Benjamites were that way. They could shoot sling a rock within a hair's breadth every time. So if the Benjamites could, and they lived around where the Judas people were, so if they all lived in the same neighborhood, I'm probably sure that David probably picked up some slingshot stuff from some of them old boys. Here's some tips on how to throw your slingshot. Here's some tips on how to hit. And if all you got to do is watch sheep and throw rocks, pretty soon you could probably get pretty. I remember when I was a boy, I used to throw my knife. There was a time I could throw my knife pretty good. I can't hit nothing now with one. But there was a time, if you get used to slinging rocks or throwing rocks or whatever, pretty soon you get pretty good at it. In fact, it gets to a point where you can hit your target a whole lot more times than you miss it. So it says David went to the creek where the water, and there may be some symbolization of what the water does there. I'm not going to try to do there, but that the water runs over these rocks and it smooths off the edges and rounds them off. And so David picked him out 5 smooth stones. And he says he puts him in his shepherd's bag or in his script, which is a little bag that they carried, like a little flip pocketbook or whatever, because we didn't have pants pockets back then. And so he flipped up his little thing. He put his 5 stones in there. And he says, and he already had his sling in his hand. He wasn't just goofing off. He wasn't saying, well, let me find, where'd I put my sling at? He already had his weapon ready. He already had his rocks ready. He was probably used to doing just like this and just like that. He had practiced that so many times, he didn't even have to look in his bag to know what he was doing. And I guess you know we're not going to finish tonight. So it says here, he had his staff in his hand, and he chose him out 5 smooth stones from the brook, and he put them in his shepherd bag, which had them even in the script, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Now the Philistine's already out there picking and fussing and making all kind of racket, and David's walking out there getting his stuff ready as he's walking. Looks so innocent, looks so young, looks so sweet and boy-like. And you have to wait till next week to find out the rest of the story. So, who's got that marked at 41? Okay. Brother Keith, would you dismiss us, please?